Hello, and welcome to The Staffing Show, the only podcast that delivers tools, tips, and tactics from the staffing and recruiting industry's top executives and thought leaders.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Staffing Referrals. At Staffing Referrals, we understand the challenges your agency faces every day, from finding high-quality candidates and clients to automating your recruitment process. Our platform is designed to help you grow your agency faster. Imagine a world where your agency can automatically build your talent community, improve your recruiter's productivity, and automate manual processes, all the while improving the candidate experience. But don't just take our word for it. Here's what a few satisfied customers have to say. Our referral program boomed after partnering with Staffing Referrals. The technology allows us the tracking, communication, and reporting our traditional referral program desperately needed to unify and expand. Can't imagine our business without it. Are you ready to transform your staffing agency? Let's reduce your dependency on job boards. Deliver the experience your candidates expect from a modern business and turn your talent pool into a competitive advantage. Visit staffingreferrals.com and get ready to grow.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us for another episode of The Staffing Show. Today, I am super excited to be joined by Dan Mastropolo, who is the Chief Vision Officer of Shift Fillers and the President of Oak City Advisors. Dan, thank you for joining me today. Thanks for being on the show. Super excited to have you on.
Yeah, no, thank you for having me. Really appreciate it. I'm excited about this topic today. It's something I know you know I'm passionate about.
Yeah, same here. So to kick things off, just give every little kind of perspective on who you are. Could you give us a little bit of background on Shift Fillers and Oak City Advisors?
Sure. So I'm one of the original founding partners for Shift Fillers. Shift Fillers is a high volume light industrial staffing company that we built really at the beginning of COVID when our world shifted. And, you know, we took an approach that basically was really to stay focused and be a light industrial supplier to basically the MSPs and high volume enterprise accounts. We primarily service everything through, you know, a vendor on-premise model. Really from day one, just kind of started it with, you know, making sure that we were very high tech enabled staffing company to really leverage, you know, as much of our tech stacks as possible to be able to communicate and drive high volume placements in the light industrial space. Also really try to decommoditize the temp, you know, light industrial space to give more workers a voice. And, you know, we've done a really good job of, you know, becoming a major player in that. And then Oak City Advisors, I started actually back in 2018. And what we focus on is helping staffing companies navigate the complexity of technology and staffing. So we do a lot of third-party workflow automation. We also do a lot of server architecture and design for companies, you know, that haven't necessarily started to truly own their data and really just help people navigate, you know, these multiple systems to streamline a lot of their technology for their day-to-day as well.
That's awesome. And one of the reasons I'm really excited to have you on the show is I feel like there's your level of expertise when it comes to not only what the tech stack strategy should be from a high level is really impressive, but you're very hands-on. You actually are jumping in and implementing and connecting the dots. And sometimes you talk so fast about the technology that I have trouble keeping up with it, but you figure out how to solve some problems in ways that I think other people aren't. And, what I was hoping to dig into a little bit today is one, kind of getting your just expertise and thoughts around tech stacks and kind of what's next in technology. And then also something I know you're passionate about, and we talked about a little bit, is building talent communities, which is a little bit of a hot topic right now, as I think we've all seen the kind of fluctuations in job board pricing. And it's one of those things that, there's sometimes alternative paths. So to start down that path on the conversation, could you just tell me, maybe define what a talent community is from your perspective?
So a couple of years ago, there was a new terminology that kind of came into staffing, which was basically called, you know, direct sourcing. And over the last couple of years, direct sourcing has really taken off. And, you know, the way that I really think about a talent community, basically getting a better cost per unit out of your talent database and helping redeploy those people so that you're able to see a greater return or a better cost per unit of what that actually shapes out to be. And the way that you do that is by utilizing technology, you know, your existing, you know, talent database, by bringing resources in your tech stack that really help you drive engagement so that your talent pool is actually an actively engaged talent pool that can be deployed you know, basically through enterprise business or multiple market, you know, local markets and clients, so that you're basically constantly keeping these people working. Because as a staffing company, right, our cost gets more controlled the longer people work for us by, you know, either reduced SUI or, you know, just the fact that we're not basically spending that top of the funnel money. And so, you know, really at this point, there's a couple different versions of progression within direct sourcing. And you're seeing a lot of these companies that adopted it early, which I'm very fortunate. One of the companies that acquired me with Shift Fillers was Raise Recruiting, who's been a very early adopter of this methodology. You know, they're really starting to catch traction within these enterprise accounts, you know, that want to see, you know, either cross-pollination of brands, for example, where they're normally competing in a market. These things allow us to basically help leverage and basically redeploy amongst those brands so that, you know, they're basically, you know, able to really meet the demand. And it's critical when it comes to high volume staffing, especially in saturated marketplaces.
I mean, this is obviously a topic that's near and dear to me with staffing referrals, obviously, and something I was excited to have a conversation around. When I talk to staffing agency owners and kind of staffing executives, is the learning about the size of their database and then the actual use of the database and the ROI on it. And I think that when you kind of jump into the direct sourcing, it's like, okay, you should for sure be nurturing your database and getting more out of it. I was talking to somebody the other day and they're like, we have 130,000 RNs in our database. And yeah, every job that we place is coming from Vivian or one of the job boards. And it's like, well, wait a second, why not? Like, email the people you have. So when I think about the direct sourcing component, it's like, go to them, which you absolutely do. And then the secondary component of that is, what does their network look like? You know, like how many people in your database are connected to the people that actually need the job, that are the right fit for the job today, which is where I feel like the adjacency of direct sourcing to talent communities.
I definitely understand it, right? You joked around about me speaking really high level and not always making sense with people that don't understand it. And that's kind of a commonality of what my life is pretty much all day, you know, but let's just be clear. I've been an operator, which is why, you know, I think about technology and I'm probably as detailed as I am in understanding these configurations. Cause one, I've stayed agnostic to most HR tech for a long time, over a decade. You know, secondarily, I came out of Randstad. So I got the enterprise side really early on in my career and feel really blessed that's where I started, but then made that shift like many from corporate to, you know, independent. And when I went independent, right, number one thing was I always joked around, but, you know, just like sales and finance don't always get along, right? One wants to save money, one wants to spend money. You know, it's very similar, obviously, even with, you know, TA and finance, because TA is under the gun to, you know, basically meet this demand. And, you know, secondarily, most of the time people want to spend more, you know, in job board or programmatic advertising. And, you know, the reality is, to your point, you know, these job boards that are getting a little bit more expensive and updating pricing, you know, now all of a sudden we're all, you know, trying to navigate, how do we do this without liquidating more margin, right? For me in light industrial, the margins are so small that you really just have to kind of control cost all the time. But most of the time, my TA team is calling me saying, hey, you know, we need more candidates at the top of the funnel. Well, my first question always is, how much have we actually tried to engage what's already in the database? Because between Raise and myself, you know, Shift Fillers has probably close to almost 200,000, you know, candidates in our database right now, 50,000 active app users. Raise is pushing well over 1 million plus in their database, right? There's a lot there. And, you know, we've taken an approach, especially, and I believe that this should be a TA strategy for most agencies today. TA is not just job board and programmatic spend. It's basically, you know, automated referral management and trying to, you know, utilize the existing talent network you've already invested money in, plus job boards, plus programmatic, plus, you know, grassroots, plus, you know, marketplace partners, plus, right? So it's not just one lever in today. It's all of those things that really go into a full TA strategy. But when you execute on that, right, your numbers are multiplying at magnitude. Now it's back to engagement, which is a fundamental, you know, tech stack, you know, area that we spend a lot of time, you know, trying to get creative with.
I mean, I think just to kind of add to the importance of this, a couple of things I've heard from our customers talking about staffing and referrals right now for a minute is kind of the risk that you take if you are 100% dependent on job boards over time And one of the things that we're seeing as a trend is a lot of staffing agencies are coming to us and saying, hey, we're at 10% of our placements come from referrals today. 3 years from now, we want to be at 20%. 5 years from now, we want to be at 30%. And we want to just continue to drive more and more of our placements from referrals or from direct sourcing from our database, basically. The one thing, I don't know why I had never thought of this, but one of our customers was like, it's like, well, I have two options. I can either pay my candidates or I can pay Indeed. You know, like one builds loyalty and the other one makes Indeed wealthy. So a couple of different options there. And I say all of this with, I do think that you need Indeed and that Indeed is a great platform. I shouldn't be talking so directly against it. It's a good tool to have out there and you need to use it from a sourcing perspective. So,
no, you definitely do. And, you know, I think, you know, one of the things that tends to be a aspect of direct sourcing, right, is basically utilizing client brand, right? And, you know, a lot of us have really strong client partners and their brands do carry a lot of weight for us, right? But, you know, typically through this mobile strategy or direct sourcing or just all of the above items, right? There's a lot of things that are kind of in my world co-branded. ShiftFillers has, you know, what we consider winning moves and why people would want to maybe represent us and that be a powerful brand within our internal network. You know, but there's other, you know, companies that we support whose brands carry a lot of power in local market. And, you know, really between direct sourcing plus mobile strategy, plus a couple of the other things that we utilize in our technology to kind of make us stand out and be different is leveraging all of those things.
Yeah. And what are some of the, I mean, are you, you've talked about a few of the platforms that you guys use. I think one of the things that a lot of the listeners are always looking for is like, what is in the tech stack and any advice or tips that you would want to share with everybody that's on today?
Yeah. So I can definitely point out a few, you know, that are in the stack overall for us on the ShiftFillers side. But, you know, I think a lot of people also want to understand what actually makes a stack, right? So, you know, essentially in my ShiftFillers world, our stack actually starts with a direct sourcing technology called Opli. It's one of the top three. You kind of have Opli, HireLever, and Worklom are kind of the standing direct sourcing platforms today. We basically use that from a curation perspective to basically fuel portion of our ShiftFillers top of the funnel from Raise's existing database they use, you know, that system from. Secondarily, you know, we're really then into what we consider an ERP, which is a combination, you know, front office, back office, which would be the equivalent of your Aviante's, Bullhorn, Job Divas of the world, anything that basically blends client relationship manager, applicant tracking system, and what I call mid office, right? And basically, right, most of us then transition mid-office, back office, which, you know, combination, you could have some of those standalone ERPs, or you go to more enterprise accounting like QuickBooks or Sage Intacct or those types of things. But in between that basically ERP and mid-office, one of the most crucial layers is communication layer, right? And how we actually communicate. We at ShiftFillers use Sense, but you know, in addition to that, we also have staffing referrals playing a key component for us in automated referral management. And really, you know, we utilize a lot of communication through your tool, you know, plus the combination of Sense, which is really used to once again get into the main component of this, which is engagement, right? Those things, and the easier we make it to communicate both internally, externally, and, you know, with clients is so crucial to essentially what we all call kind of this seamless communication platform. It's the expectation today, especially of a light industrial worker, right? They don't want to spend more than 10 minutes applying for a job. Most of these people have Indeed Quick Apply and they're applying to 30 jobs at a time, right?
Well, I've seen the new AI where you can have it. Applies to 200 jobs a day for you.
It is. And it's, you know, that's not getting slowed down anytime soon, you know, but for most of us, right, most of that is attract, engage, onboard, deploy. But most companies that let it stop at deploy are missing out on where most of our margin comes from, which is then redeploy, right? And so, you know, for us, we're using all of those things to make sure that we can redeploy quickly. And, you know, I think one of the best statistics that sits for me in ShiftFillers world is beforehand, we're kind of fragmented with the communication layer. When we kind of made those changes between you and Aviante and Sense specifically, our redeploy rate since January of this year is up almost 30%.
That's amazing. We just heard stats like that recently from one of our customers who was saying that the time on contract for referrals was, we've heard 3x for one light industrial customer, 96% for accounting and finance companies. So it can be pretty significant, which is awesome.
That's an actually really interesting analytic too, on like the length of assignment, because outside of just our redeploy rate, like our average length of assignment in the same period went from basically 2 weeks to almost six. It's a really big number when you start actually quantifying it.
And this is one of the metrics that I want to bring to the industry to start focusing on. It's the same way, it's a SaaS metric, is customer lifetime value by source. But are you looking at candidate lifetime value by source? Are you saying, okay, here's the gross profit for candidates based off of the where we got the candidate from?
Believe it or not, right now, the main one that we track is actually with your platform on staffing referrals. You know, yeah. It's a new addition to the dashboards, which we really appreciate you guys adding. But, you know, we definitely see it on at least our it may have been, I didn't want to take the credit. I was going to literally slip in and take that one. But it is definitely an analytic that is really, you know, kind of stood out for us. I mean, we're definitely over a 10%. You know, placement rate with our referral metric. And for us, we see a pretty high value in the gross margin line. I don't necessarily look at it so much on the other sources. However, we do track, obviously, what percentage of our candidates are coming in by source. You know, we always see, it doesn't matter what we're comparing, we always see our referral candidates generate higher revenue, higher margin, longer lengths of assignments compared to other sources. But, you know, a bulk for us in Shift Fillers, like I said, 10% come from referrals. We get about 10% organic from our website. And then we get the other from basically Indeed is our three main sources.
You've implemented more tech and been more hands-on than most people I talk with. What are some of the lessons learned or challenges that you've encountered over the years of doing that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I think, let me start with probably the easiest one, right? Over the years, it was really challenging being 100% in what I call marketplace to marketplace integrations when you don't necessarily own your server on your side. And that's really just because of the fact that a lot of product marketplaces in our world prioritize a lot of their development based on client demand or ask. And, you know, for us, one of the biggest shifts that we've seen, not just in Shift Fillers, but a lot of clients I consult for on the Oak City side, you have to be ready for that step. A lot of people are still behind, I think, in just hiring technology resources in-house. I think personally, a lot from what I hear from customers, it's because they don't have confidence that they know how to manage it. And it tends to be a little pricey to go, you know, into that world. So for me, that was a big lesson I learned probably a little over 7 years ago. But there was a big difference in, you know, speed to execution and being able to take more control of, you know, what things you kind of bring together and how you utilize data. And then once again, when you own all these things in your server and have a decent server architecture, it does drastically improve your ability to build BIs and custom dashboards and see different analytics that you tend to not just get from one source. So that's one. I think the secondary thing is, a lot of people jump into automation with what they need because of asks from typically people in their team. But the people that tend to analyze that, especially at C-level, are typically looking at that only from an ROI perspective and typically just from the pain point that's coming from either the business unit or the department or a branch that maybe has that one-off issue. I don't see a lot of people that take time to actually write out their workflows and really take time to understand where those processes are costing them money and really looking at things end to end when they go through those gap analyses of what they're, you know, essentially taking as their business case to solve. And obviously that comes with experience. Obviously that comes with a lot of hard lessons and doing things probably the wrong way for a really long time. But the people that I consult for, where I always see the highest ROI, is with the people that take time to really analyze those things, gap analyze that on a bigger scale for the entire business, because then you can actually streamline automations and workflow design to potentially get higher ROI. Or if they're like bigger ticket items that are going to cost money for, you know, product development or, you know, an enhancement to go to an API plus package, you know, with, you know, your partners, you know, it's not as easy to get the ROI if you don't slow down to kind of speed up. You know, those things for me have definitely played instrumentally into both speed of delivery and seeing quicker wins on low lift, high ROI versus high lift, low potential ROI because of the cash need to support it. So this would be probably my top two.
Yeah. And it sounds like the second one is just really be intentional and strategic about it and don't just piecemeal it together. Think about the whole picture. We had Justin Clark from FSTAP on the podcast the other day. And he was talking about, well, it's such a clear thought now, but he's like, I was like, how do you measure success? He's like, time it. He's like, time, how long does it take a candidate to get through it? And I'm like, oh, that's, yeah, of course. Of course, that's a very simple and great way to do that. And also something I hadn't thought of. But
yeah, no, I love Justin's a good client of mine for a very long time. And, you know, one thing Justin and I completely relate to is, you know, we both really operate with the mentality that people and technology work best together. I'm sure he probably said that on the call with you. And it's true. You know, you need both elements of that, you know, to really get the most out of it. But, you know, the other principle we really have is, you know, in a tech stack, a lot of people think about internal users and candidates, you know, and in my world, it's actually a tri-party triangle. It's end users from a talent perspective, it's internal, and it's clients. And there's a very different persona in every one of those from a UI and a UX perspective. You know, I operate, and most of my clients know this, I've said a ton on different things I've publicly spoke at over the years. From a candidate perspective, they need very little. The more you have there, the more adoption you're going to have as an issue, because, you know, most people like bells and whistles because they think it looks good. But the more bells and whistles mean candidates are only going to still probably use the top two or three things that they care about in a mobile strategy, which is, you know, they want to see their jobs, they want to see their schedule, they want to be able to get to time, you know, and payroll quickly. And they tend to like being able to refer people or earn extra income quickly. You don't need a whole lot more there. Same thing when you think about a client persona, right? Most of the time, clients just want to close gap between jobs and candidates, or not have to pick up the phone to send an order or send that email. Or, you know, most of them are already working with vendor management systems. So when you bring this extra technology in, they're already so absorbed in that, you know, that it's just an extra step. So that's more hesitancy to adopt another thing in the day to day. You know, the internal users are the most complicated to think about, because they're the ones that are feeling the pain of all those manual things, right? If you go into a branch, for example, how many times a day do you think these offices get called, you know, for payroll question, call outs, availability, just to ask what jobs are available, even though they're posted 900 different ways, right? Like, that's all admin burden that's coming to your teams that if, you know, you haven't necessarily gone to, you know, a cloud call center or some type of AI tool or some type of self-service menu, that's all burden coming back to the agency. So, you know, I take a lot of pride, especially in my Oak City side, ShiftFillers as well, but we have built so much stuff out for compliance and like other things that just take a lot of that burden, you know, into more proactive communication internally in native systems like Slack or Teams or Google, right? Like, there's a lot of those things that become possible, you know, through these extended APIs. And when you really, once again, go back to that comment I made about the gap analysis and understanding the use cases or business cases of where you're potentially, you know, exhausting your internal staff with these repetitive type items, it's a lot, you know, that you can catch wins there if you just kind of slow down, open up and talk about it, and then, you know, really pay attention once again to where you can get a high ROI just purely in hours back and mental health for your employees.
Yeah. And with all of that, you talked a lot about kind of what you've done and some of the tips that you have on implementing tech. Where do you think staffing's going? Where do you see 5 years from now, what does a staffing firm look like?
That's always a fun question to, you know, chew over a little bit, because, you know, I think what's interesting is I think that question could be answered differently, really honestly, in our verticals. You know, you take healthcare, for example. COVID drastically pushed healthcare staffing into, you know, 2050 overnight, because it had to be adopted for the demand, right? Light industrial, in my opinion, is the most poised and needed for this tech. But because of the fact that we don't have more mid-market staffing companies, you know, necessarily adopting it, it's been mostly enterprise or, you know, larger firms.
Yeah.
It's a slower adoption at the client level, because, you know, it's only a couple of us saying, hey, we really need this in our strategy. Where, you know, you take things like Gale Healthcare and ShiftKey and a bunch of those healthcare groups, it became a staple overnight because nobody was able to really execute without it in that period of time. So, you know, when I really look at it, right, I think I said this a couple of weeks ago on the Aviante internal conference for mobile strategy I did, you know, you look at where we are today, there is so much being talked about AI and the top of the funnel and speeding up, you know, the processing of candidates, you know, and it makes complete sense. Once again, we started this kind of with job board spend and the amount of money we spend in programmatic and the volume of applicants that come in. And the reality is, you know, most staffing companies, TA groups can't even touch 10 or 20% of what they're spending to come into the ecosystem. So naturally you're seeing AI, you know, spend, you know, most adopted there. However, when we really start progressing and we stay true to this end-to-end solution kind of in mind, right? I see AI coming a lot more into, you know, mid office, back office items, because, you know, there's a lot of still mundane processes, you know, that essentially are manual time reconciliation from, you know, the time and attendance side, right? You know, right now, I'm blessed I sit on the board for TimeRack, but, you know, TimeRack has been one of the few TLM mid office companies that have really come in and said, listen, we want to solve this problem for the industry because of how much waste, how much margin erosion goes into those areas. And, you know, once again, when we're really evaluating AI and where AI comes into conversation for ROI, right? Yeah, we get it on the top of the funnel. And if we can process more and get more people to deploy, great. But guess what? If clients aren't ready to intake that much more volume, does it really solve the problem? It doesn't, right? So you need to see that get now adopted on the client side to be able to actually onboard and intake orientations at those volumes, especially in LI. However, secondarily, we don't really control a lot of this third-party clock. So I see a lot of that progression going into, can we get AI, you know, to evaluate variances between clocks, VMSs, ATSs? And I think those things will really quickly start to adapt because it's the second lowest area to be able to go get more margin back into the business that most of us just don't have great options for today.
Yeah, I've actually heard a couple different people talk about that. I think some of the Y Combinator were even saying like, some of the biggest opportunities, or they were asking for AI solutions for back office, like the boring processes that nobody wants to do, repetitive processes. Like, how can we get AI to go in there and disrupt this? And we're already using automation for it. So
I think the other area that we're going to see a lot adopt to, I'm really fortunate, Dan Jurarski, who's a great friend of mine at Credivera. And, you know, I've got other, you know, people that are really into like Velocity Network from the blockchain perspective. But, you know, the second area or third area I really see a lot of this, you know, technology advancing is, you know, in an identity and security perspective, right? You know, I joke around, but you know me personally, for me, I've got 35, 40 systems I see on a daily basis between, you know, everything we've just talked about. I feel like my personal life is Fort Knox in this phone. I'm on, you know, 2FA authentication, SSOs for freaking everything. I got, you know, I've spent half my time just copying numbers to unlock XYZ. And, you know, for the average user, let's say for even like a healthcare, you know, person, right? That's a lot. It's a lot in their day to like be able to get into those, you know, things. Like, you know, you tack that in with credentialing and people having to kind of understand that there's risk if they're staying in traditional backgrounds, because unless you're continuously monitoring or randomized, you know, you're not necessarily always exposing the risk that you may have on some of these sites. So a lot of those, you know, are also advancing to where you see mobile wallets, easier ways for people to share credentials, you know, with key stakeholders and stuff like that, you know, that speed up that credentialing and background process amongst employers. And I think those things are also critical to seeing a lot of adoption, both from candidates and users, because it's just going to be a better experience.
I'm personally excited for that. I'm tired of logging into whether it's the Netflix, ESPN,
I'll tell you, I was talking to Maggie and the team over at Credivera a couple of days ago, and they actually just launched and have been building out passwordless security with Microsoft. And it's really unbelievable, some of the advancements you're seeing there.
That's great. That's great. I'm excited. I'm super excited for that to move forward, because scanning the QR code is a better step, but I feel like there's a way to go.
Definitely.
I think we're going to laugh about that someday. Oh, you used to pull your phone out and scan a QR code to get into the TV.
That's so funny. It's so true. But you know, next time you're just going to have some AI aviator talking to you, you know, from the screen, like they're your own personal TV host for whatever you want.
Yeah, we'll have a deep fake of Dan Masterpolo here. I don't know. I don't think I could keep up with your pace, though.
I don't know if you saw it the other day. I saw Maya Hubbard from Tateo posted her AI of herself. It is pretty wild what those things are turning into.
It is incredible. So with that, we're going to go ahead and wrap up to the speed round. So I just have a few last questions for you. What advice do you wish you were given before entering the staffing industry?
Oh, man. Find the magic pill that keeps you young forever. Definitely lost a few years in this industry. No, I'm just playing. I think some of the best advice that I've gotten so far in my career is there is real value in slowing down to speed up. And the more that you don't react to what is chaos for most of us on a given basis, you have to kind of hold yourself accountable to asking the question, is this a one-time thing? Is it a major problem? Is it somewhere in between? Because a lot of us are so reactionary to what seems in the moment is monstrosity and chaos. But when you really look back on a lot of those items, it really wasn't that. It was, you know, an isolated incident that became bigger because we weren't prepared for it. So then we just reacted to it. I've taken a lot of pride at slowing myself down. I think I'm fast now. You should have heard me when I was 23 starting at Randstad. You know, I got hung up on probably 100 million times because it's even more important when it comes to technology and really taking time to make sure that your business case is something that is worth going down the path and investment for. Because, you know, once again, tech is an investment. It is all the time. And you don't always see it in 2 weeks. It's sometimes a year or two, because it's repetition and adoption that really gets to see those things in magnitude.
In the last 5 years, what new belief, behavior, or habit has most improved your life?
I'm going to probably say something a little untraditional, but I'm also very public with it. I take a lot of pride in my faith. And for me personally, you know, I think in those last 5 years, I've done a really good job of asking myself, you know, is this something my spouse or my faith is okay with in a lot of what I do? And trusting that those things, you know, maybe in those moments, I couldn't see exactly what I was experiencing. But now looking in hindsight, those 5 years, I went through very specific things to be able to be at the level that I am today. And without those experiences and kind of like learning that about myself, I don't know that I would have been able to reflect back on it in the way that I have. That makes me really appreciate it. And it's been, you know, really critical to me staying true to who I am through some really challenging times in the last 5 years.
Last question I've got for you is, what book or books have you given most as a gift or have been most influential to you?
I'm going to go with probably my top two. The first one is Rhythm from Rhythm Systems. Rhythm Systems is a kind of an equivalent of like Traction and Rockefeller Habits with scaling up and, you know, kind of principles behind those kind of two that are blended. I've done all of them, but, you know, essentially for Rhythm for me, we use Shift, like at ShiftFillers, we use Rhythm Systems technology and book as kind of our starting point. All three of those are very much geared towards hyper growth companies. And basically, I live in startup world. I've basically been in startups for almost going on almost 7 years straight. And when you are thinking about a concept that you're trying to turn into a business, and you need to be able to understand how you get high levels of revenue in a niche, you know, that basically comes with solving problems within that space. And then also setting up your team into a cadence of how to hold yourselves accountable to the things that it takes for companies to get to those levels of what we call hyper growth, which is typically a 10x or higher valuation. It's been instrumental. And I still use almost 10 of the 15 major principles every single day in everyday conversations, both from consulting and internally. The second one is Critical Conversations. Naturally, as leaders and business owners, right? It's impossible to not be able to have hard conversations, both with, you know, senior leaders, internal staff, partners, vendors, coworkers, people in the, you know, market, whatever. But, you know, a lot of people, I think when they get into those conversations, tend to want to automatically get into a defense of why that opposing party needs to convey or, you know, change their mindset to them. And for me, it's actually completely different. It's me trying to understand as a leader why you have the concerns that you have and making sure you feel comfortable to approach me in those conversations and, you know, taking time to make sure that you're responding to what those, you know, kind of situations are and really listening. And that book does a phenomenal job with how to navigate those conversations.
That's great advice, Dan, and really good having you on the podcast finally. And then we've talked about it for a while. Any closing thoughts that you have for the audience?
I'll close with this. And I think I've said this probably 20 times on half these things that I've done. But, you know, first and foremost, thank you for having me. It's always, you know, a pleasure to be able to speak about the things that you can obviously tell pour out of me and are just the passion of my life of this industry. I don't say it enough out loud, but like, I love being able to give back to an industry that's given so much to me in my career. So that's first. The second closing thing is, you know, when it comes to technology and adoption and, you know, starting to, you know, want to explore those things, the reality is since COVID, which is shockingly already almost 4 years ago, it just changed our world to where some of these things are expected from the people we do business with in the staffing industry every day, whether it's candidates, internal employees, or clients. And if you haven't started to adopt outside of just a traditional ATS, or, you know, for some of us, most of us spend a lot of our careers just on spreadsheets, you know, to get started, the quicker you dive in, the quicker you'll see, you know, why these things are catching and why the companies that are essentially in what we can still consider the fastest growing companies of staffing in the industry, you know, and why they're on this trajectory versus a flat trajectory. It's because of the fact that most of us have figured out a way to start adopting it, and you need to essentially, you know, start doing it. And once again, if you're unsure, that's why you have people like me, you know, willing to help start those conversations. So don't hesitate to, you know, reach out or just take the leap of faith, because it's definitely worth it.
Awesome. Well, Dan, thanks again for being on. Really appreciate it. Enjoyed the conversation and have a great day.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to The Staffing Show. Don't forget to sign up for our newsletter at staffinghub.com to never miss an episode. Until next time.